This episode of Current Geek is brought to you by Casper, an online retailer of premium mattresses for a fraction of the price, because everyone deserves a great night's sleep. Get $50 off any mattress purchase by visiting casper.com/currentgeek and enter the promo code CURRENTGEEK.
I have it.
Current Geek!
Current Geek!
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Current Geek. This is the weekly proceedings of the meetings of Frog Pants All-Stars, geeks of the world, and you. Man, that was authoritative. To keep you current on all things that matter most. That was a three. I'm Scott Johnson. That's Tom Merritt. Tom, wielding the hammer of doom over there. What's going
on? Well, I feel like with our secret plans for Current Geek that we need to bring more authority.
We're going to hint at it early, are we?
Wait, what? What did I say?
I don't know what you're talking about. Maybe later we might hint some more about some cool things.
I didn't say anything at all about boxes.
I don't know anything about a box.
Or secrets.
Well, we have two things that aren't very good secrets. That is our guests today. They're not really things. They're people. They're fantastic guests who are returning today. Let's start with Brian Dunaway. It's been a while, man. Welcome back to the show, dude.
Hi, Scott. Yeah, it has been a while. Like, I don't know, five episodes?
Mm-hmm. Right?
Me and Ibbitt were on just, I think it was about a month and a half ago, 2 months ago, and he is currently winning.
I think he might be tied, though, with Jenny Josephson at this point. So, yeah, I know. There's going to be a fight at hand. Most recently, his fine helping and running of the podcast track at the Dragon Con, as well as co-host of mine on things like Film Sack, the old ELR days. Final Score has his own podcast now called Comics Coast to Coast and still killing it. So good to have you here, man.
Coast.
Yeah, man. It's one of the originals. Yeah. Comics Coast to Coast.
Right.
It's old school.
One of the first C's or something. I don't know what that means. Also with us, returning also, him and a baby. One man and a baby. It's my favorite movie. It's Roger Chang. Roger, welcome back to the show.
Thank you very much for having me and my daughter.
Not a problem.
Eating my quartz.
Roger was kind enough during the week to say, "Now, are you sure? Because I'm going to probably have her with me." And I said, "Absolutely sure." I'm a big fan of kids. Like, I'm that guy on an airplane.
I know.
I'm on a plane, and if there's a kid crying, me or my wife or both of us will offer to, like, hold the kid. Like, we love the kids. So bring the kids.
You are like a rare breed. Like, all I ever see on airlines are people, like, really grown people. It's like, they're just kind of mumbling to themselves. It's like, no.
Yeah. They'll do that till they're dead. And then what was this all for? So I figure, have the fun you can now. Try to make a positive influence on a poor mother on a plane and move on with your life.
Are you sure you're not trying to steal the kid? Like, you're like, look, I can tell this kid's crying. You don't want it anymore. Let me hold it.
Yeah, let me hold this kid.
Take this off your hands.
They go for a pretty high dollar amount when you know who to talk to. Anyway, it's good to have you here, man. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Roger Chang, an old school podcaster too.
Oh, big time. Yeah, I should not be mentioning all the things he does.
East Beats West is coming up on its 10-year anniversary next month.
Oh my gosh, you guys
do
anything?
You got to do it for this month.
Are you
going to do that? You're right.
Are you going to do anything special for the 10 year?
We'll probably do a show.
Okay.
We'll probably do a show then we'll probably kind of ramble on and how much we've aged.
Wow. Yeah.
And really how much we've changed, but really haven't changed.
I'll put my mic in a tea kettle like I did in the early episodes.
You have beat The Instance by 4 months at its 10-year anniversary. That's pretty crazy. All right. Well, we'll get to a bunch of cool stuff here in a minute. But first, like always, it's the headlines.
Herbert Hoover, Secretary of Commerce in 1922, finds infant radio facilitates news gathering, as do many others in high public office.
It's the headlines with Tom Merritt.
Infant radio today will be played by Roger's daughter.
Yay.
If you've ever wanted to live on top of a volcano, and who hasn't, Captain Kipper has the place for you, the Volcano House. It's a saucer-shaped, mid-century modern home perched on top of a 150-foot cinder cone deep in California's beautiful Mojave Desert. It's a two-bed, two-bath house on the market for only $650,000. Has beautiful 360-degree views, a two-car garage, and a bonus ground-level two-story caretaker's house, perfect for henchmen.
You know what? I would totally live there, like in a heartbeat. I'm looking at these photos. I mean, it's super weird, but you wouldn't even have to ask me twice if I had, let's just say I had $10 million. $650,000, let's just throw it at it and have it as a, like, another home to go to once in a while. I mean, look at that thing. Like a big old nipple in the sky. What do you think, Roger? You want this thing?
I am going to be contrarian because I've always been fascinated with those folks who buy up the old nuclear missile silos and turn them into underground home/shelters. Mm-hmm. Because to me, that's like the ultimate kind of hobbit experience. You're not living in a hole in the ground. You're living in the hole in the ground.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. The one that used to house death and mayhem. It's interesting.
And you have infrastructure built by the U.S. military. I mean, that thing's going to – was designed to withstand, if not a direct nuclear impact, something within like 5 miles
Let's be clear. The volcano house was not built by the U.S. military. but it's a lovely buy, and I'd love to show it to you guys.
Oh, okay. You're representing for the...
It was once owned by Huell Hauser, the late producer and host of the TV show California's Gold.
Oh, well.
I love that show. Oh, well. I still watch it. None of you know who Huell Hauser is, do you?
No, and I don't know what California Gold is. I've never even heard of that.
So imagine a man with a really thick Tennessee accent who did a PBS show series called California's Gold, where he would try to find these stories behind various facets of places and people in California. Now, what made it so very interesting and so very unique was that he would just turn the camera on and just kind of walk with it and just stick microphones into people's mouths and just kind of, it was almost like a stream of consciousness kind of thing. You know, there was no fancy editing other than like the open title and the credit. And it was literally like if two guys were just walking around with a camera that they had it on recorded, just walked around and they were talking. The most awkward one is where he goes to the Baghdad Cafe used in the movie Baghdad Cafe. And everyone's like looking at him. It's like, who the hell are you? And it's on YouTube. If you can find it, you'll get a good laugh.
Huell are you? Here, I'm going to play. I got a little voice from Huell. Here you go.
We are being led down into the forest by the avocado dog. And we are heading down in here because we understand there's some actual picking going on down here.
All right. So it's a dog who can.
Some grinning.
It's a dog.
It's a dog that eats avocados.
Or a dog that can find them or huff them out or whatever. He sounds like you're from he's from your neck of the woods there, Dunaway. What do you think about that?
I think he's an amazing talent. I'm just kind of concerned that I don't know if I want to live in a cinder cone. Is that totally dormant? No chance of volcano again?
Look,
I think that's just a mound.
Aside from it sounding like a drop in Diablo, I swear I've picked up the cinder cone a few times. it does, Tom, it would freak some people out because it sounds like it's on a volcano itself. Like, there's no fear of this erupting, right? It's not going to just pop one day.
As far as the law and insurance are concerned, you're fine.
Okay, good. Well, sign me up because I mean this sincerely. I love weird houses like this. People that show tree houses in jungles or like what Roger was talking about with underground silos, like that stuff's fascinating to me. And I would be all beside myself to own something like this. I'm just the sucker they're looking for.
You want to buy the Flintstone house?
Yes, in a heartbeat. Yeah, I would. Or the Simpsons house that's not far from me. I'd buy them all if I could.
Now, if a volcano house is not supervillain enough for you, how about a human head transplant?
I'm ready.
If you remember, we talked about this earlier this year, Sergio Canavero announced he would perform the first human head transplant for 30-year-old Russian Valery Spiridonov, who suffers from a rare motor neuron disease. And now, as Matok pointed out in the subreddit, Dr. Canavero has recruited Xiaoping Reng, a neurosurgeon from China's Harbin Medical University, and he has tentatively scheduled the transplant procedure for December 2017.
Oof. So
it's pretty optimistic.
Yeah, it seems real positive that everything that doesn't. None of that sounds. I don't know, man. Roger, lay it out. What do you think?
I'm going to inject my Roger heavy with skepticism viewpoint.
All right.
The one doctor has done similar procedures with mice. But what they hasn't told you is they were all paralyzed after it because
they were able to regain some function and lived for minutes.
Minutes.
Well, you know, the monkey they did lived for tens of minutes.
Yeah.
Tens of minutes.
No, the monkey lived for several days back in the 50s. Yeah.
I thought it was literally under an hour that it survived.
Maybe it was 9 hours, but it was longer than minutes.
Is it that weird?
It looked miserable.
Well, that 50s video of the old monkey, right? Is that the one I'm thinking of? That's like a head just kind of blinking around looking at people?
Looks like it belongs in a Tool music video.
Yeah, I don't like that stuff. Yeah, like a Tool video. Oh, my gosh.
Listen, he'll have a new body or head, but, you know.
It was 1970, and it was a rhesus monkey. And the monkey survived on life support for a total of 9 days.
Wow.
Recent monkeys.
The head ultimately rejected the new body.
Yeah, how do you determine that? Okay. Is it the primary, the primary mass, or is it the mind that is considered the
important
part?
Is it mind or matter, Brian?
Is it mind or matter?
Age old question.
that connects your spinal column to everything else that functions in your body.
So, I mean, you got a mutual rejection here because you got to have the body be okay with it and the head. It's not like either or. It's got to be both of them. They both got to agree.
They figured it all out, man.
They haven't figured out crap because they can't even repair Superman's spine.
Advances in medicine reduce the risk of rejection.
By how much?
A lot.
Like face transplants make sense to me because you can reconstruct tissue, you can create bone mass, you can do other things to help that not be rejected. You can figure out ways to get blood to be accepted by that tissue and all of that. And that's been done a couple of times and better each time it's been done. And the most recent example I saw the other day looked really good. I think that maybe one day there might be a chance for this, like where any body part
and
could
that
be very
day
quickly.
Is December 2017,
right, guys.
That's
just
funny.
A little polyethylene glycol on the old spinal column and zip, zap, zam. You got a new body.
You just need to use lots of lasers during the procedure.
I don't know.
It's really, you know, we're calling it a head transplant because that gets all the headlines. It's really a body transplant.
It is a body transplant.
It's a body transplant.
Yeah, it just depends how you look at it. But either way, I'm kind of with Roger. I think we get to the news and it's not going
to
work.
I want to know, okay, this is okay. It's hard enough to get body parts from other people. Usually I'm assuming they're going to wait for a donor to come in. It's going to be really tough.
Gorilla body.
Like, yeah, gorilla to get what? Right, a gorilla body. It's going to be really tough to get another human body that has not been damaged. They would basically have to die from something from the neck up.
Yeah. Yeah, no. Here's what they need to do. That's the hard part, right? Because if you die and get your kidney, it's because you were still warm when you died and I got your kidney put on ice and got it to the ICU. It's a little bit different when you're talking about an entire body. But if they do succeed at that, I want the gorilla body but a spider monkey head. Just a little tiny spider monkey like in Indiana Jones who ate the bad dates.
You're a madman. Scott, a madman.
It'd be amazing. Yeah, the Beetlejuice guy in the
waiting room.
I just want an Olympian athlete's body.
Okay.
So I can be impressive for at least a short time in my life.
EFC 88 sent in the story that NASA has confirmed that Saturn's moon Enceladus has a subsurface water ocean that spans the entire globe. Confirmation was made due to the observation of a pronounced wobble in the moon based on Saturn's gravity. Jupiter's moons Ganymede and Europa also have subsurface oceans. So I don't know, Brian. I was thinking of going with a little wiggle in your walk joke or possibly a somewhere near Enceladus, Lord.
Enceladus.
Sort of joke.
Enceladus.
Well, usually if I retain too much water, I wobble. So I can totally see this all in the subsurface.
Well, no, this would make other people around you wobble is the theory here because it's the moon that's wobbling, right? How do you observe a wobble in the moon with such limited knowledge I have about how moons work? It doesn't seem like it would be that noticeably wobbly, right?
You would pick a fixed point, I guess, around its supposed axis. And I guess you measure if it drifts.
It's just a wobble.
Just a little wobble. I mean, the Earth wobbles a little bit.
Yeah, but what is this? You're just going to look at a video and see it. You've got to measure it with the Cassini spacecraft, which is why they have that.
So you're saying we wobble a little bit? I didn't know.
Yeah, supposedly it's because
everything wobbles.
When the Soviets set off like one of the largest nuclear explosions, it set off. It's very minute. It's not like, whoa, it's just like really minute.
Yeah, it's very small.
Wobble in the
Earth. You have to do precision measurements.
Okay.
Get enough a big enough bang, you can do anything.
Okay,
right, so it's not like a Pauly Shore wobble. It's like, whoa, dude. It's more like...
It's not a pronounced wobble.
Okay.
Right.
Well, that's good. Pronounced wobbles seem like they'd be real bad for us.
The excitement, of course, is life. There could be life under that moon.
True.
Yeah, because there's hydrothermal vents, which have life on Earth. They're like, maybe there's life in those hydrothermal vents.
2010 proved that there was life on Europa,
that's
right?
That's true. Oh, yeah, it did. Here's the thing though, all these recent discoveries by various craft and various means and ways in the space industry / whatever, NASA, whatever, has proven one thing, that things aren't what we think they are. So the more I get information about Pluto and about this and other things, the more I'm convinced that most of our planetary knowledge up to this point has been, if not wrong or outright wrong, severely limited, because who knew there would be a body of water anywhere out there, you know?
That used to be one of the big concerns. Like, it's going to be dry in space. There's no water, really free-floating water. Like, it would be stored up as ice or something. Yeah. Now you have, like, these vast oceans, and everyone's thinking, well, perfect for colonization.
Yeah.
I mean, especially when you live next to a giant gas giant, which puts out more radiation than people see in like 1,000 lifetimes.
Water's a great insulator for that.
No, the ice. The whole idea is that you build colonies under the ice, and the ice will protect you.
Wow. Course, you just need but to we can't it. Drink that the water.
Water colonies of Enceladus. Leave what? Your volcano home.
Well, who's going to be the first guy, though? Hey, Bill, drink some of that water. Let's see what happens. Like, no one's going to drink that water.
Well, you know, that's not how it works, Scott. You don't just land on a planet and start drinking water. You refine it. You filter it. You make sure it's safe.
You take your Brita filter with you.
I really like the idea that it's like caveman-y, where they just show up and start tasting berries that look good, you know?
Mm. And then they mutate into half-man, half-monkeys.
Right. Tiny head, giant body. Tiny head,
yeah. Exactly. Hey, Captain Kipper sent us news that the BBC plans to launch its own subscription streaming video service in the U.S. next year, although...
Boo.
Yeah, before you start cheering, it will not include shows which are currently licensed by other streaming services. That means no Doctor Who,
what?
No Sherlock, at least until those deals expire. Although we might get some classic Doctor Who, because those aren't on a lot of other streaming services. But BBC Television commissioned more than 20,000 hours of programming last year, and they've been making TV since 1922. So you're likely to find something to watch.
I don't know, man. This is there are now, I'm ready to say this officially. There are too many people who want me to subscribe to their standalone streaming service.
Too much choice.
It's not so much choice as
too
it is. They all want $15 each. Now, it's fine that they're all a single app on a single Roku or Apple TV or some device. That's nice. That's basically like a channel. I get it. But when you're all going to charge me $12 to $15 a month, or let's say $8 to $15, just to be fair to everybody across the spectrum, this is starting to be more expensive than a cable bill that already include all of those shows. So they're going the direction I want. They're just all deciding to charge amounts of money that make it not worth it, and it almost forces people back.
About something that is not a fact of this article.
All right.
What if they finally announce that this is going to be $1 a month? You're going to be eating your words.
All right, that's a good point. But Tom, look me in the virtual eyes and tell me you think this thing's going to be $1 a month.
This is going to be more than $1 a month.
I'll bet it's 10 a month at the minimum.
But,
the minimum.
You know, you're already leaving $7.99. We don't know. We don't know how much it's going to be. And here's the thing. For years, we've been saying, just give us choice. Give us control. That's what it's about. To me, it's about being able to turn it on and off whenever I want and being able to choose where my money goes.
Yeah.
And that's what's awesome is if I think that the BBC service has the things I want to watch and I'm not watching anything on HBO, boom, I turn off my HBO Now service and I put that money over to BBC until the HBO show that I want to watch comes back on. Boom, I go back to HBO Now. Maybe I turn off something else. Maybe I turn off Hulu for a while.
That's a fair point. Right. Most of these guys are shying away. I guess they all are now from like...
A la carte.
Well, sure. A la carte maybe is the ultimate utopia, but until then, I like the idea that I'm not signing 2-year contracts for crap. That's nice.
Speaking of utopia, it's a Channel 4 show in the UK, but it's the kind of show that I can't get anywhere else in the US but by Blu-ray. But if Channel 4 had a service like this, it'd be totally worth it for a month to binge on Utopia.
I guess so. But most of this is going to be like sitcoms you never heard of, like Cheeky Monkey or something.
Again, let's wait until we see what it has. Before
we want to complain now. All right. We want to complain now,
Dunaway,
Tom.
Listen, Dunaway, I just want to touch on this with you real quick. You are one of those guys that has always had something to say about various services as they come online. Whether they be streaming services or some kind of subscription-based thing, video games. We've talked a lot, you and I, over the last 10 years about that stuff.
Yes.
Do you or do you not think that it's becoming a bit cluttered with everybody doing their own thing? Now, maybe that's a la carte. Maybe that is the a la carte we're going to get, and maybe I'm looking at this completely glass half empty. But too many services asking for your money, or do you want some consolidation? I can't believe I'm asking that, but go ahead.
Right. Well, as consumers, we've been used to... consuming content through basically, just like I just said, it's a basic content and then premium content. Like CBS offers in the United States, offers a subscription to their programming. And I'm like, okay, you don't have enough programming to entice me now if you're on another service.
$6 a month, though.
Right. It's fairly inexpensive, but I don't want to manage all of that. So some things just don't have the value enough to stand alone. And I'm a little bit worried that the BBC is going to take the CBS route, which is originally they were kind of like, yeah, we're cool. We'll put a few things on Hulu and we're going to kind of hold on to other things for now. And then they just kind of started pulling all their stuff off. And I'm worried the same thing's going to happen here with Doctor Who and other shows that we're already experiencing in
if there only were a service that would consolidate several different channels together and allow us to subscribe to all of them for one price.
I'm doing that.
And the market will bear that. The market will make it so that that happens eventually. Until
oh,
then,
wait, when that happens, we complain. Choose. I'm paying for channels right. I don't watch.
No, you're right. Listen, Tom's right. And I hate that he's right, but he's totally right. It's we can't win and we can't lose here, or we can't win for losing, or however the phrase goes.
Listen, when we win, we lose. Right. Basically, the life lesson here.
I'm really happy right now with HBO Go, or now rather. Hulu is their new commercial free thing, is a no brainer for me. I love that. I love Netflix, and I really like Amazon Prime. Between the four of those things, I feel like I almost have everything I want to have. It's this weird itching feeling that, wait a minute, if BBC's going to do it, there's going to be stuff I don't have. Oh no, what do I do? I got to have that stuff, even though I really don't have time to watch everything I'm already watching. So don't buy it. That's what I'm saying. I have an artificial, I'm giving you credit. I have artificial.
You need to do all the quests.
I have an inflated sense of what I need. I really don't need.
You feel you're going to miss out on the giant pop culture universe.
I guess.
Like, there's going to be that one facet of knowledge you're going to be completely oblivious to, and you're going to be sidelined at the next convention.
Exactly.
Again, that's the brilliance of this, that I think people are not quite, we haven't had it, so it's hard to internalize it, is that if you want to watch that thing on the BBC service, then you subscribe to it, watch it, and cancel.
But is it genius, or is it being, from the article I was reading, aren't they getting pushed by the government? Because isn't this largely funded by the government?
Well, the BBC is going to get their budget cut.
Well, the BBC's budget is... funded.
Right. So this is an act of desperation more than anything.
Maybe.
BBC rakes in a lot of money.
Yeah.
Like crazy amounts. If they weren't so busy hiding pedos and covering up for jerks, I'm sure they would be in a better fiscal position.
Yeah. Right. I'm glad you guys are taking the position of people who get angry when they're offered something that they don't have to take.
What is this crap? Get away from me.
It is a representative sample of the internet that needs to be
the only... The only anger that I have, or not
How
really
How dare
anger,
you offer me a thing I don't have to take?
I'm a walking Reddit thread.
The only gripe I have about it is, of course, that I'm afraid that their business model will impede my ability to watch Doctor Who like I currently already am.
But it's
am.
The opposite. They said that. You're not going to get Doctor
now,
Who through the service
now,
no,
but
it's they, already
but they,
on another
but they
service.
Definitely, but they definitely said, well, you know, until those contracts expire, in which case we're going to screw you all.
Right.
Good luck.
I like it. We're just a little bit paranoid, and then Tom once again here to keep everyone calm. The zombies are just outside the city. We have a big spiky fence. The zombies can't get in yet. We're thinking about how they're going to, and he's going to calm us down. It's fine. I like it.
We're all going to die.
Yeah.
Hey, guess what? Fair Use had a victory.
Yay!
Yes.
Fair Use has a posse in JMZ668 on our subreddit. By the way, did I mention our subreddit? No. Folks, you got to get in there and vote on the subreddit, currentgeek.reddit.com, because that's what lets us figure out what you want to hear about. That's where we get severed head stories from, for goodness sake. Anyway, back in February of 2007, Stephanie Lenz posted a video of her baby dancing while Prince's Let's Go Crazy played on a radio in the background. Universal Criminal. Music Group had the video taken down on YouTube. Lenz contested the takedown. YouTube restored it 6 weeks later, and Universal dropped the matter. This is a very typical thing that happens where they're like, take down. Oh, wait, that shouldn't have been taken down. Okay, we'll let it go. But Lenz didn't let it go. She sued Universal under a law that allows for damages to be sought for wrongful denial of access to a posting or publication. Universal tried to get it thrown out of court. They're like, she doesn't have standing to sue. And it went to the U.S. Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, who ruled this week that, no, sorry, Universal, you're going to have a jury determine whether you properly considered fair use before you sent that initial takedown. Universal was like, we don't have to think about fair use. If we see an infringement, we put the infringement, and then fair use is a defense in court later. And the appeals court said, no, you can't get off that easy. You have to determine whether you think in your heart fair use is a defense for this or not. If you find that it is, you can't send the takedown or you can get sued. So the jury will have to determine if Universal properly considered fair use before they sent this takedown notice. And the court said that rights holders who fail to do so can be held liable for damages. So
that's great.
Yeah, it seems good to me.
I think one of the issues is that for a lot of these large media conglomerates, they hold so many copyrights that they literally just have an algorithm that just goes search through, like super stupid, and it'll just flag it. And there's no active thought or any kind of...
Like Google famously has gotten takedown notices for 127.0.0.1.
Yeah.
Local host.
So did... I mean, she's... Does anyone know
Have you
her
seen the video?
I haven't seen the video, but I guess it's funny to me because there are so many YouTube videos of people dancing with music in the background.
It's like, you know, this is what gets people excited about your music and will more than likely encourage them to purchase it or something.
Right, but it's not going to drive one of those people. I mean, obviously we're supporting what the court is saying or we're supporting what she's saying, yeah. but it's not one person is going to hear that, see that baby dancing to that crappy quality music in the background and go, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to rip the audio from this video of this kid dancing and I'm going to put that on my iPod and listen all day.
Well, that's where you're wrong, Scott. What it undermined was the market for licensing Prince music to women who would like to have videos of their babies dancing to Prince music.
That's not even the complete
song.
If
you know you can just get away with it like this, you'll never go pay for the license to have that music.
I see. Right. I see how it is.
It's that even one, it's that one, you know, section of the song that you like so much and always constantly repeat. So you don't need any of the other bits.
The one thing I'd like to learn about, and I don't think I've ever read anything about this, and maybe somebody out there can send in and let us know or put it in our Reddit, but Vine videos constantly have background music and they're 6 seconds long is all. So there may be something in place that says, hey, if this song by Beyonce only plays for 6 seconds, even at full quality, you know, even dubbed in and then the video uploaded, not just like in the background, it's fine because of, I don't know, maybe there's some fair use thing about duration. I don't know, but that happens all the time.
There used to be one for TV and it was a rule of thumb.
It was, yeah, exactly. All of these things are rules of thumb. Yeah. The best place to go is Stanford has an excellent section on fair use where they describe the four factors that are used in determining fair use. And there isn't a hard and fast rule about anything. And honestly, that's the way it should be. You shouldn't say like it's always 6 seconds because sometimes 12 seconds could be considered fair use. Sometimes the entire work, if it's part of commentary, can be considered fair use. So You really want it to be evaluative based on the nature of the work, what it's doing to the commercial prospects of the original work, whether it's commentary, et cetera, whether it's transformative. Like that's the way it should be. The rules for fair use are actually fairly good. They just are rarely enforced well.
Well, do you think YouTube will ever be held to a standard of nuanced approach rather than
YouTube is a safe harbor.
That's, I guess, my question.
So it's not about YouTube. YouTube, very clunkily, in my opinion, is being a safe harbor and saying, you tell us what we're to take down, we'll take it down. You tell us it shouldn't be taken down, we won't take it down, and you guys fight it out in court. The content ID system is broken, so it's very inefficient. But one of the things that's going on here is the courts are saying, and this has been YouTube's maintained this all along, is it's not us, it's you. Mm-hmm. The court said, no, Universal, just because Content ID said that there was a match for something doesn't mean you get to send a takedown notice without any kind of liability. You have to consider whether that Content ID identification actually was without any kind of fair use before you send the takedown notice. No one has abided by that before now.
Well, that was my question, is because I understand where YouTube's position is now and where they sit in the middle, but do you think they'll ever be held to a different account because the nuanced approach requires them? Do you know what I'm saying? Like it doesn't, Universal can go to the takedown notice, look at the video, make a determination then, and then their lawyers decide, is this fair use or not, which is what the court is saying they need to do. But will YouTube ever have a greater responsibility
YouTube
in this?
Shouldn't have, really. Mm. What my problem with YouTube, and by the way, my wife works for YouTube. my problem with YouTube is that they allow Content ID to be used by some people and not by all people. And so they've made a sort of unlevel playing ground, but that's not against the law.
Right.
What YouTube has said is all we're doing is letting people know with certain information, which is like, you told us you own this song. We find matches for that song. What you do with that is up to you, right? And so some people have said, turn on an automatic thing where you automatically send a takedown notice. And the courts even said that's okay. Like fair use is sort of built in as a consideration there. If you're saying if the entire work is there, send a takedown notice, because they're like, usually the entire work is not fair use. Mm-hmm. So the courts have even said that Content ID doesn't have to go down here. All they've said is you can't just say, I don't have to consider fair use when sending a takedown notice.
Right. Mm-hmm. Simply because you got a notification that somebody was using your music.
And YouTube's always said that. Yeah, that's right. It's up to whoever's like requesting the takedown notice. They bear the responsibility, not us. All we're doing is providing information and complying with requests.
This stuff's going to be great books one day, isn't it? Like just down the road. Right.
Well, yeah, someday, you know, all of us will be dead And there'll be people like, can you believe back in the early days that this was the copyright system? It's crazy.
Yeah, that's going to, I won't be here probably, but I look forward to
either that or we'll be uploaded in a robot
box.
I'll be
around because I'll have a new body.
You'll have, exactly. You'll have a little you'll monkey head. All you'll be able to say is, man head. You'll go, ee, 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 ooh, and that's it. You won't be able to do anything else. You get dates. People throw dates at you. That's it.
Hey, real quickly, Star Fury Zeta wanted us to cover what Sony announced at the Tokyo Game Show. So here are the big three. Project Morpheus has a name. It's PlayStation VR.
I think it's good. I like it. It's good. It's good.
Four new PS4 controllers will come out in Japan later this year in gold, silver, steel, black, and crystal. And three, starting October 1st, the price of the PS4 in Japan drops from 39,980 yen to 34,980 yen. That's about a $292 or 258 euros.
Yeah. No word of anything here in the States, which I didn't expect anyway. It's selling really well here.
It's
so.
The Tokyo Game Show.
Yeah. So, plus that's where you announce that stuff. However, I just want to say this real quick. I'm glad they changed it to PlayStation VR, or as a lot of people call it, PSVR. That's a great sounding acronym. /initialism, I guess, is more what it is. And Morpheus was enigmatic and didn't really have any connection to anyone other than hardcore gamers who've been following this very carefully, who've been watching all the E3 conferences and know what the crap's going on. Mainstream console buying America, Japan, and Europe do not have any connection to Morpheus right now, but they will understand intrinsically what PlayStation VR means as a brand, and I think it's smart.
Blue pill.
Yeah.
I think which pill do you want to take?
Yeah.
That's the Morpheus I remember.
The one that told Zion to celebrate or whatever.
Let's have a rave down here. Woo! Show who's boss.
Mm-hmm.
By day, you go under the name Mr. Anderson.
Oh, very nice.
So there you go.
Ooh, yeah, exciting stuff. Go PlayStation.
Brian Dunaway, you wanted us to talk about this epic video of Disney animator Glenn Keane drawing in virtual reality using a stereoscopic headset, handheld controls, and state-of-the-art software called Tilt Brush to let him walk around and through an illustration of Ariel. Keane is also not a VR whiz kid. If you don't recognize his name, he's the son of the guy who drew the family circus, and he has worked for Disney for years. He animated Ariel from The Little Mermaid, The Beast in Beauty and the Beast. He's amazing, and the video is awesome.
He's also, by all accounts, 15 times the artist his dad was. Not to say his artist was bad, but man, that guy raised some good artist kids. His sister too was kind of a big deal at Disney. Right. So anyway, yeah, Dunaway, this stuff is rad, right? I watched the video. It's actually a Vive, one of the Steam VR sets. Mm-hmm. Use the two little towers, what do you call them? The ones that, you know, designate real space with virtual space. And he just walks around and sketches in the air, and it looked like like a piece of cake. It looked amazing.
That is incredible. Amazing. I mean, to be able to do that, I mean,
really cool.
I was blown away. I mean, I really haven't been blown away by someone's use of a technology in an artistic sense in a long time. And watching him, a true artist, get in there and just he's taking these big brush strokes, and it's just fantastic what he's doing. And it's also interesting to try to understand what his mind's trying to gap, which is drawing three-dimensional objects on a two-dimensional plane, and now he's actually drawing something that is basically a 2D dimensional plane represented in 3D. So he still draws like he's not sculpting like you would expect from a 3D environment. He's like drawing inside the 3D environment and bringing some of the lines forward towards you, and creating this mixed hybrid of a really interesting art style.
One of my favorite things was he had bubbles coming from her that were coming toward the camera. And the only way I can describe this is think of parallax in video games or another media where you see background and foreground elements seemingly in two dimensions, but moving the background elements are moving slower than the foreground stuff or whatever. And at one angle, that just looks like bubbles coming out of Ariel. You turn slightly to the right and you realize those bubbles come way out toward him in that space. And it's just a fascinating use of that tech and got me all, you know, 20 shades of excited. I really am excited about that. 50 shades. Okay, I'll go full.
Yeah,
50.
Thanks for sharing that, Brian.
Yeah.
I loved all 50 shades.
It's a good one.
Gray, all 50 blue, shades of red.
Yeah, gray's good.
Gives new meaning to foreshortening.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Oh, and I just one quick note about it. One of the coolest things about it was on his arm, he had some kind of static, relatively stationary device, either on his wrist or hand, I couldn't tell which, that would... it wasn't just the controller anyway, but it basically the cameras could tell where that was in 3D space. And then up on his arm would pop up a virtual
palette,
but it was like Mass Effect or something, you know, with like this like holographic arm thing.
Oh, nice.
It is, and he's just looking down to it intuitively, clicking on that. All right, I want that. And then looking up again, putting it in. I mean, real presence of being in the space. Like we're all going to, I'm going to spend all day in that.
I really thought that technology and the use of the technology, I thought that was much further away. Seeing him actually do it was just like, wow, it's here now.
Yeah. No, that broke down a bunch of walls for me as far as where are we now? We don't even have these things in consumers' hands yet. No. And I understand making a scary 3D video game where stuff's jumping out and scaring the crap out of me. That I know we could do right off the gate, but I didn't know we could do this. So big stuff coming. All right. Before we jump into the pop quiz, Tom and I might be brewing something.
We're totally brewing something.
Yeah. Let's just say it involves a box and it involves us and it involves the name Current Geek.
Do you like cool frog pants related stuff?
Yes.
You like surprises? Mm-hmm. I don't know, to know a little bit more about the rules that govern the scoring on the quiz? Ooh. Or maybe some like never before seen drawings of Scott Johnson.
How about
artwork? There might be a way to access all of that on a regular basis coming to you soon.
Yeah. And let's just say box. That's all we're going
to
say.
Box. Or do I have to worry about members in a box?
Nope.
Or, you know,
none of that. No, okay. No penis in a box is if that's
nope,
what you're getting
thank
at.
You, thank you.
Just current geekiness. That's our slogan. Current geekiness. No
kinkiness.
Will there be a gavel in my box? Maybe.
I don't
it
want
could there. Be an art gavel.
That's a question we can't answer.
We can't answer that one, but there might be. I'll just wait and see. Really quick here, I want to talk about our friends at Casper, who are sponsoring today's version of Current Geek. Big thanks to them. They're awesome. They're revolutionizing the mattress industry by cutting costs of dealing with resellers and sitting around in showrooms and passing all that savings on to you, the customer. They have mattresses that are obsessively engineered at a very fair price. The two technologies at play here are latex and memory foam. And take it from somebody who has a Casper mattress, those two things work nicely on me. Very, very comfortable. Here's my favorite part. I got 100 days to evaluate the mattress. 100 days. And I decided very early I was keeping it, so I didn't even need it for that long. But you too can get a 100-day evaluation period. That's right. They send it to you, no risk at all. You try that thing for 100 days. If you decide to keep it, great. If you decide not to, no questions asked. You can send it back. Here's another great deal for you. I want to save you an additional $50 as one of our audience members by going to casper.com/currentgeek and enter the promo code currentgeek. That's casper.com/currentgeek and the promo code currentgeek. All right, pop quiz time.
America scores and wins.
All right, it's time for the pop quiz where you guys get tested in areas of your expertise. You've both done this before. It's a fun
and
competition.
Failed.
If you get a question right, if you get it wrong, and Tom scores the whole thing, we're going to start this time with Mr. Brian Dunaway.
Do it.
This is for a movie you don't like.
Oh, my God.
We like doing those.
I thought we already did this one.
Well, we did it once for Minority Report. Which
okay, this is a different movie.
This is a different movie. Star Trek Into Darkness.
All right, Star Trek Into Darkness.
You didn't like that. You're not a big
fan.
So
I'll have lots of knowledge on it. Go ahead.
Yeah, no problem.
You answer the questions? We'll find out.
It's pretty good. All right, here's your first question. What species accidentally sees the Enterprise at the beginning of Into Darkness?
Big giant sperm whales.
You are incorrect. It was the Nibrians or Nibrains. Nibrans. Those are those white, chalky looking people down on the planet that was all colorful.
Oh, yeah, those guys.
Yeah, they weren't supposed to see technology. They were breaking the prime directive there.
Oh, that's right. That's right. I remember that now.
Next up, after Scotty resigns, who takes his place as chief engineer of the Enterprise?
That would be Captain Kirk. And he started kicking the technology to get it back. going again.
That was kind of dumb, but you're wrong. It's Chekhov took his
Ding
position there.
Oh, that's right. Chekhov did do that. I didn't know that.
You're absolutely totally right. what Beastie Boys song is featured in Into Darkness?
It's not Sabotage. Wait, or is it? No.
Don't sleep till Vulcan.
Vulcan.
Sleep till. I'm going to go with Tom's answer. No sleep till Brooklyn.
Vulcan. It is Body Movin'.
Oh, Body Movin'.
But Brian gets a point for using my answer.
Yeah, nice job. Sabotage was used in the 2009 movie, for the record. Who plays Admiral Marcus in the movie? This is the old man Marcus.
Old man Marcus is played by Pee Wee Herman.
Oh, you're so close with the P. It's Peter Weller, Officer Murphy from the original RoboCop.
You get a tenth of a point for having a P.
Yeah. Did you notice I didn't really watch this movie very well?
I can tell.
Because
you like Peter Murphy, or not Peter Murphy.
I love Peter Murphy.
Peter Murphy from Bauhaus. Remember him?
Peter Cetera.
Yes.
Oh, Peter Cetera should never be mentioned in the same sentence as Peter Murphy. All right. What is the name of. I already did that one. No, I didn't. What is the name of Admiral Marcus's ship? It's that big black, mean, evil ship.
The big black dildo.
That's exactly wrong. It is the USS Vengeance. Nice
try,
though. Like
I said, the big black.
It looked like an Enterprise with just like spikes and darkness.
Right. Angry, like it was going through its goth period.
It was
right?
Pretty pissed, yeah.
Right.
What is the name of Scotty's assistant homie? Meaning his assistant.
Assistant homie?
Yeah, his little creature, his little alien.
Oh, yeah, the little troll looking Ewok thing. Oh, geez. Professor M.
It is Keen Sir is the correct answer. Keen Sir. Second to final question. What name does Khan go under prior to revealing his true identity to Kirk and Spock?
Professor X. Professor M.
You're totally wrong.
The professor.
Couldn't be more wrong. John Harrison is the correct answer. John Harrison. Final question.
Johnson? Is that what you said?
Yes.
John Harrison.
John
That's
Harrison.
A stupid name.
How many of Khan's crew are stored aboard the advanced torpedoes?
All of them. Well, yes, dead joke.
That might be correct. I don't know. But the actual answer is 72. Wasn't all
I
of
get
them.
A point for a dad joke.
Yeah, that's not bad. All right, well, you did terribly, but there you go. We'll get back to you in a second with your score. Don't worry. Roger, are you ready for yours, sir?
Ready as I'll ever be with a 8-month-year-old.
She can help you. No cheating. Vintage computer trivia.
Oh, joy. Ooh.
Something you like. All right, here you go. Who was the first customer of the Cray Research's Cray 1 supercomputer?
Sandia National Labs.
You are wrong. It is the National Center for Atmospheric Research.
Oh, Noah.
Close. Not really, but also complicated, and I'm surprised you knew that other one. Anyway, what did the LC in Macintosh LC stand for?
Low cost.
You are correct. First ding we've heard today.
Speed bonus. Half point speed bonus.
That's really good. What U.S. state does Steve Ballmer mention Windows can't be ordered in from his commercial for Windows 1.0 from 1986?
Rhode Island.
You are incorrect. It is Nebraska. He says that at the end, except in Nebraska, it says at the end. When did Apple launch the Mac Portable?
1990.
You are so close. 1989.
Enough. 89. I was like, oh, no, wait. I remember in high school.
You get a quarter point excuses deficit.
All right. I'll give you a chance to get bonus points on this. How much do you think it retailed for?
It retailed for $4,800.
$6,500.
Good golly, Miss. I know you cost
could,
my.
Dude, in 89, you could buy like a Hyundai for that. That's just crazy.
I did buy a Hyundai. It was used.
I did too. No, I had a used Hyundai and it was garbage. What year did the Commodore 64 become discontinued? I guess the better question is, what year did they discontinue it?
1994.
You are correct. Nicely done.
Nice.
I think you've won already. What music video?
You only answer one question to beat me.
What music video was included on the CD-ROM for Windows 95?
Weezer's The Sweater Song, and I don't remember.
You are correct. It's Buddy Holly. Oh, no, Buddy wait. That's not the
Buddy
Sweater
Holly
Song.
Right. The Sweater Song's totally different.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, no, you're right. Yeah. Buddy Holly.
It was Weezer, though, so I guess Tom, you
decide. You lose a quarter point confusion.
All right. Fair enough. What computer system did Texas Instruments, also known as TI, release in June of 1981?
What computer system?
Yeah.
Not the TI-99.
Are you saying not that or that is it?
I'm just saying TI-99.
That was correct then. You got it right.
No, it's the TI-99-4A.
Oh, the 4A. Does that matter? Does that count?
So we're going to give you 0.8.
And you're going to need a TI-99.
That's right. Oh, I don't know why. Here's the next one.
Almost done.
Final one. What year did Apple get rid of floppy disk drives in their computers?
That would be with the iMac when Steve Jobs came back, so I would say 1998.
You are absolutely correct.
Was
nicely
it that
done.
Long ago?
Yeah, it was a while ago now. Remember that is
so
such a big controversy.
I remember.
We're like, what? Yeah. No floppy disk.
Nobody could believe
How can we survive?
I remember John Dvorak's thing on what would be the new floppy disk, and he was comparing between the zip drive, the LS drive.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
All
you
the crap.
Just use your jazz drive instead.
Your jazz drives. Yeah,
you
all
get
that stuff.
Those for like a nickel now.
I remember people flipped out when Apple dropped CDs. Like, that was a huge deal on their notebooks and on their desktops. They just quit putting CD and DVD drives in there.
I've missed it once.
Yeah, I don't think I've missed it ever.
And one time when I realized, oh, I can't do that.
I complained a lot at the time, but I haven't missed it. So
I have one in my notebook right now, and I'm going to replace it with a hard drive.
Yeah. I'm not so sure about their latest thing to try to, on the one notebook, to get everybody to use USB-C. But
I think it's crazy to get rid of computers.
Yeah, computers, that's a weird thing to get rid of. So let's not do that. All right, let's see what the scores turned out to be. Both did, interestingly.
With a highly respectable 2.100001,
yeah.
Brian.
Yeah.
And winning with 3.8, Roger Chang.
Nicely done.
Closer than I thought it was. I didn't think I got any.
Well, you got... Tom sometimes does the strange little things, and you get points, no matter whether you deserve them or not.
Thank you, Tom.
Well, that's what he's here for. It's time for
God
Forecast.
Hates me.
The future promises even more startling things to come.
Yeah, it's more like Ice Worm hates you. But Forecast is a thing on the show we do, which is it's based on an old show we used to do, but it's now segments where we try to predict the future. We got a robot-driven cars-related thing here. Who came up with this one? Whose is this?
This will be mine.
Oh, let me do it, dude. Give it. What do you got here?
Okay, robot-driven cars can't come soon enough for us driving Mr. Lazy types. I demand to be chauffeured around and entertained by a mechanical driver with a soulful Morgan Freeman voice, please. But I have a feeling we'll be seeing semi-truck driven by burly robots long before the day comes. Prepare for the revolution, truck drivers. The robots are coming. And they want your jobs and coffee-stained wife beaters.
You know what I love most about this prediction?
What?
Is the implicit request that we don't want driverless cars.
No.
We want cars driven by robots.
Yeah.
Anthropomorphic robots. I totally have changed my opinion on self-driving cars. I no longer want just a self-driving car. I do want a Morgan Freeman voiced robot in the driver's seat.
Well, think about what we do with computers. We make folders on desktops and have files, and we have real world analogs for almost all our technology. At least we tend to. So I don't see why Johnny Cab's such a far flung stone from what will actually happen, because people want to feel, I don't know, something familiar. Perhaps it's more helpful if all this voice tech takes off.
They need a metaphor.
Well, maybe, right. But think about this. A Johnny Cab style driver, and all you'd have to do is go. Also, what's the, because you're driving and you're sitting around back there. You're like, what's the score for, what's the Raiders game?
How about them Cubs?
Yeah, he'll say, the Cubs have scored 3 points in the third inning. You know, like he could tell you what's happening.
Can you believe that Trump guy?
Well, I don't know about that. But, like informational stuff.
Yeah, cabbies love to talk politics.
Sure.
Yeah, but I don't want a cabbie, though.
You don't want a cabbie? You say you don't want a cabbie.
But yeah, want a robot you could dominate, though.
I just want Johnny Five giving me funny quips as I do my work.
A gin and tonic?
Yeah. Or just say, play Beethoven's Fifth for me. Or, just a voice commanded.
Well, then you just have a voice commanded dash.
Yeah, right, but people
want to do that now.
But people like the, I don't know, they like
people want the robot because it's future. That's it.
Plus, no, I want the robot because
concept.
I want a robot because I don't think the front seat is a very comfortable place for me to sit mentally if I'm not driving. I'm not comfortable sitting in that seat.
I think what happens is there's an entire reimagining of the interior layout of a car, right?
Well,
I think
we got it. But
it's going to look
like
a rumpus room, unless a bunch of recliners.
Every technology we have, though, we have to have a transition period, and I think we're going to need to put something in that driver's seat. And I don't think they're going to reimagine the car in all in one swoop. If they do, they'll fail.
Well, okay. So here's one place that like science fiction has got it wrong. Think about all the time Star Trek has shown artificial intelligence that helps us get around and do things. The ship computer is just a thing you go, computer, please tell me the blah, blah, blah. And there's no representation of it unless you're on the holodeck or something. So there's just this voice of Majel Barrett going, turn left at the star and go forward or whatever. Then you still have Data and Geordi and everybody else in the driver's seat. So,
which I never understood.
Me really. Either. Me either. Like,
why do you have a computer driving a computer that's driving a ship?
Yeah, it's weird. So to me, they never got it right. If we're truly heading toward transportation that is completely personless, in terms of getting us where we need to go, and it's just coordinates and moving us, whether it be cars or ships or whatever, they really got that wrong, because they really felt strongly that Data still needed to have his hand on the steering wheel.
Piloting is more than just numbers. It takes a human touch.
Does it? Apparently not, because every time he left it to a human, they would end up in some sort of hour-filled long adventure.
Oh my gosh. Tom's Kirk impression made me choke on water. Oh my gosh, that was good.
But I really do feel that even though we want the cars, I think a more reasonable near-term goal is going to be that we're going to convert our transportation into something driven on its own, like truck drivers.
I think these are going to be parallel initiatives. And you may be right, Brian, that the trucking industry is the first to hit the road with it.
It's the one that needs
tests happening for that. But there's so many tests happening for personal cars, too. I don't think it's going to be that much distance between the two.
I think the cost, the initial cost is going to be too prohibitive for the average consumer, whereas the business of transportation getting to that point is worth the investment by companies. And I think they will invest that money into transportation because it's already a risky endeavor to have.
But remember,
truck
we don't all have to
drive.
Buy our own self-driving car.
Mm-hmm. Right. But if you wanted to, if we want for all of us to experience it, well, I mean,
you just need somebody
really
with
driven.
A lot of money, like Uber.
Yeah. To buy a bunch. Or Roger, who's going to have a whole rumpus room sized car.
Yeah.
So you are imagining more of a public transit kind of thing, whereas I'm imagining an individual.
I'm imagining both. I just think there's going to be less personal individual cars. I think what's going to happen is I will go outside Uber style with an app or something on my watch or whatever and go boop, and a car will pull up in the front of my house with nobody in it. And I'll get in there, and there might be two other people in there already, but it came to get me personally, and off we go.
Do you think this is maybe a difference in our lifestyles? Because I live more in an area where I have to have my own car, whereas...
No, you don't, but you won't. That's the thing. Right. And I think you're right. I don't think everybody will be able to afford to have their own personal self-driving car right out of the gate, but companies will exist even in your area that can send one to you. Mm-hmm. When you need it.
Yeah.
And that's the difference between public transit is you don't have to run a bus line to Bryan because there's just not enough people live along that route.
It's on-demand transit.
Yeah.
Which is great.
Yeah, which is a great idea. Although I hate public transit. I don't like standing on a train just really close quarters with people. I would die in New York after a while. I just can't do it. So I'm going to be one of those old man holdouts, though, I think, where it's like,
you won't have to stand on a public platform. That's the beauty of this.
Home,
just wait until it shows up where you are.
Yeah, but look, when I'm driving when I get picked up by Robocar and I'm in that car with Lady and I've never met Lady before and she starts.
Wait, no, you won't share it. Why would you have to share it?
Well, maybe you could.
This is a terrible model.
No. Basically,
it.
What Tom's describing is a Zipcar that's self-driving.
Yeah.
You pay for a service and you book a car. The car comes pick you up.
It's Uber.
Yeah.
You say, here, come and get me. You don't share your cab
never,
with
I
other
would
people.
Have,
oh, that's a good
I would
point.
Never have Uber come pick me up, though, where I live. Everything is at least, a 15-minute drive.
Well, that's only because they just haven't come there yet. Like, I agree with Tom on that. That stuff takes care of itself after things spread and become a big deal. And right now, Brian, right now you could use Uber and a guy from Uber would be at your house in 15 minutes.
And how much would he charge me?
Less than a cab. That I know for sure.
Okay. How much would it cost me to
less
drive
than it would chance? Cost you to buy your own self-driving car.
Yeah, to buy your own car.
The idea is you're working off pre-existing car models. And I think what happens is it's kind of a hybrid between a Zipcar and a rental car. You put a block of time that you need the car for, and you just tell like, oh, I need to go to Home Depot to pick up some.
I don't even think you need that.
You need a car every day to get to work and back home again.
Yeah. But you need a self-driving car to come pick you up. And Tom's right. I wasn't thinking of it this way. He's right. There'd be like personal pods. That's what I want. Yeah. I'm a big fan of got my own space. I can't stand riding with somebody.
That's the kind of concept they had in, was it Minority Report?
Yeah.
Where, the idea is that the chassis is separate from the cabin where you sit. And everyone would have a personalized cabin that the chassis would come up and just pick up.
Yeah.
And just drop on itself and then drive off.
Yeah.
It's like the Hyperloop.
No, they totally got the car thing down on that show, that
they
movie.
Did. And but that's, I think that's so far in the future because, like I said, I don't live in a city.
Brian, it's like, when you say so
need
far.
You to live in a city, Brian.
It's like 20 years. If that's far in the future,
I think
then,
it's 5 or 10 years for the city, maybe 20 for Brian.
Yeah. 20.
If they can 10 years,
I think it's longer than that.
A city.
Yeah.
You won't have to worry about it.
I'll bet.
We didn't get airbags in cars until what, like the 90s? And they had airbags in the 70s.
Look,
early 70s.
Look, so. Brian, where he lives, they're just getting Temple of Doom in theaters and got unleaded gas like a week ago. So It's a little out there in the middle of nowhere, but no, I think that that's that other stuff. But part of what you're not realizing too is there'll also be kind of some growth in 20 years, perhaps, maybe in your area that you're not expecting. Right. So I don't know. I'm kind of with everybody here.
I think economy definitely drives what is developed first. And like I said, I feel like that the trucking system needs it first. And I think there's going to be more money behind it.
I actually kind of agree with that.
I think there's automated a lot of dreamers. Yeah. I think there's a lot of dreamers who would love to see the other happen first with our cars.
But trucking is having it happen too. You're absolutely right about that. So that is happening and will happen. But it's not just dreamers. Like there are 8 or 9 different companies who have street legal tests of autonomous cars happening in multiple states. Like this isn't just up on somebody's whiteboard.
Mm-hmm. Even Honda just got one for California last week.
Yeah. And Apple met with the California DMV to discuss autonomous vehicles this week.
They had to wait in line forever. It really sucked at the DMV.
Horrible picture.
Great forecast discussion. I always love this.
Yeah, good stuff, man. Yeah. Good topic, Brian.
I like it a lot.
It was fun.
Don't forget, you can also send us your feedback, and we have one today. It's an email. They come to us at currentgeek@gmail.com. Here is the email from Niko, N-I-K-O, sent this in. Says, Dear Current Geekers, or Dearest Current Geekers, I got to say that right. What one thing does everyone seem to love in the geek universe that you just don't want to admit you don't like very much? Thanks for all the great episodes. Keep it up. I thought a lot about this when I found this email. And by the way, we love these short, pointed ones about things we're into or things we're not into or whatever. But it's not that I don't like Doctor Who. I just haven't felt the motivation to watch it. It's not that I don't like it. So it doesn't quite answer his question because I do like what I've seen.
Void with you.
I'm just not driven to see it. Like I just don't feel like I need to stop everything and catch up. And maybe it's a volume problem. Maybe it's like
it's a cultural. I mean, you have to really enjoy that sensibility. There's a lot of things I really can't stand that's super nerdy and I think is just abhorrent. Like steampunk. I can't stand steampunk.
Interesting.
Yeah.
If I see any more people dressed in the top hat and the Victorian clothes sporting a smartphone on a key fob, it's like, no, I don't care. It's done. Let it die.
I kind of like steampunk. That's funny. All right. So there's an example. A lot of people really like steampunk. Roger says down with steampunk. Tom, do you have a thing that you...
Yeah, I mean, there's things that I readily admit, like cameras, photography. I think it's great. I don't hate it. Not something I like. I'm very upfront about that. Mm-hmm. Facebook. Mm-hmm. Never use Facebook.
Right.
I have to be reminded and nudged to go use it. Mm-hmm. But I think the one thing that I find myself reticent to talk about as often that I don't like is first-person shooter video games.
Oh, yeah, this is coming
and off. Everybody's always like, oh, come on, you just got to try, come on. And that's what makes you not want to admit something when everybody gasps like that when you say the thing you don't like.
Gasp.
And it's just not something
it
I've
does.
Ever
Some
liked.
People get, I totally understand. And it sucks sometimes because it's like, wait a minute, the thing we all claimed to be fighting against, which was, this inability when we were younger to like a thing we liked without being bullied or mistreated or told we were geeks because we were reading comics or whatever. Now we're kind of doing it to each other in this sort of sub way of, you don't like first person shooters. Huh? I thought you were a gamer. Well, you can be a gamer and not like
it's FPS. Because as the pool gets bigger and more people enter it, all those ills of society get mirrored back in that
sub. Yeah, it's all made of humans, right?
Yeah.
Like, why wouldn't it happen?
It's made of like, people. Oh,
I was like, you like Coke? Pepsi's clearly the better cola. I mean,
Pepsi, right here.
No, I can see that. So, Dunaway, do you have a other than Minority Report? What, do you
sure.
have something?
Let me tell you the thing that I hate that everybody loved for a while. I don't know if everybody still loves it or not, but I never liked Cards Against Humanity.
Oh, interesting.
I never liked that game. I tried playing it a couple of times, and people were like, "No, you're just not getting it." And it's like, I get it.
All right, Brian, I'm going to make an admission here. I don't really like it that much either.
You know what's funny is I really don't like card games like Magic the Gathering, and I really find RPGs like the old pen and paper, because I used to play them all the time in junior, I find them really tedious.
They are tedious now. It is tough.
Well, video it's games tough. Have changed
like,
a lot
I
of that.
I tried it recently, like within the past 5 years, tried it again. It's like, oh my God, I'm, this is like cabin fever. Get me out of here. Why am I playing this?
it really takes, because it is... is against our rushed lives and just trying to sit and chill out for a minute. It's tough.
I have places to be at a certain time.
Right.
When you're a kid, you can blow a summer rolling, you know, a 12-sided die until it's like 8 o'clock. But, you know, when you have kids, bills,
a job, right? It just changes. Life. Totally get that. Totally get that. But I'm the Cards Against Humanity thing is an interesting example because that one does feel very subculture. It feels very internet culture. It came from us, sort of not mainstream sort of thing that everybody wants to treat it like. And I'm not going to say I haven't had fun around a table with a few people playing that before, but it's not the end all be all that everybody thinks it is. Now, the best part about that is it doesn't have to be. It can be whatever it is to whoever wants it to be, whatever they want it to be. But don't feel bad, Brian. I'm kind of with you. I don't want
to. When I'm sitting to the side and I'm like, no, you guys go ahead.
So let's be clear. I love that game.
Yeah, Tom loves that game.
Am I the only one that doesn't like steampunk? I feel really like alone.
You should.
I'm ambivalent. I like steampunk okay, but I'm not like, you know, I'm not going to lead the cheering section for it.
I see it. I think it's worn out.
I just like the, that may be true, but I mean, you could say that about any genres like zombies or, you know, sci-fi or whatever. But the reason I like steampunk is I just like the concept of alternate futures where some stuff stuck in the past and some things are stuck in the future. Or
that's contemporary society.
Yeah, I guess so.
Have you been to a GOP convention lately?
To me, it's like...
Yeah.
Political joke.
To me, nice job. To me, it reminds me of like why I love the... I can't think of the names. BioShock games. Like BioShock Infinite is kind of...
Oh, I hate that game.
I love that game.
Gameplay is fine. I just think that it's the most overrated video game I've ever played. Everyone's like extolling all the virtues. It's like, this is the worst example of white guy making up for racism ever in a video game. It literally has every canned ethnic stereotype baked in. And it's like, oh, I'm being progressive.
Yeah,
it's you're not.
You're not wrong. But they build a motif that is very, this alternate history motif thing that I really get into.
I never played it.
And but it's an FPS. It's a first person shooter. So why would Tom play that game? I guarantee Tom would have loved the milieu of it though.
Actually, if it was a VR game where you weren't playing with a keyboard and mouse, but you were moving around physically and then shooting at things, maybe you might enjoy it more. Or do you just not like the concept of one thing I don't like about first person shooters is you're constantly shooting things.
Yeah.
Like I get it. It's a first person shooter.
Well,
is there something I can do besides aim a gun at this person?
Then I have a recommendation for you. Play things like the Deus Ex series.
I like the first one. I didn't like the latest one.
Oh, the latest one I loved because I went all stealth and didn't shoot. I didn't shoot a single.
See, I hate that too. Sneaking around.
You're not a big stealth fan.
Can I be a normal person? Can I be respected at least once?
See, you laugh, but one of my favorite games is The Sims. Right?
I was about to say, what do you get to do?
Yeah, exactly.
But then again. Whatever. Genres, sometimes the input method is the problem, and that's all we're really talking about here.
That's part of it with first-person shooters.
Sure, sure. And then sometimes it's story, sometimes it's whatever, but I feel this way about Tower Defense. People love Tower Defense games. I hate them. I freaking hate them. I want to burn them all, so.
I don't really like things that require hand-eye coordination, timed reactions.
Yeah. Tom likes a more thoughtful, methodical approach. Like
the exception to that is I love driving games. Like
really?
Forza, Pole Position,
Patterns. There's patterns in that, and it's relaxing.
Oh, my gosh, though. I started to think about this. Okay, so let's say in 10 years it's all self-driving cars. Let's say Tom's right. Does the driving game genre go away, or does it get bigger because now there's this
driving game genre goes into the self-driving?
Look at all those horse riding games we still have.
That's now true. Now it'll shift to more like a Madden's coaching mode. So you kind of coach your.
Do we have a lot of do we have a lot of horse driving games?
I'm not driving games.
I'm unfamiliar with the horse driving genre.
Red Dead Rising.
Well, Red Dead Redemption. But that's just a means to get to a thing and then do things. You know what I mean? Like it's like your hover
really
bike.
Turning the horse.
Yeah, you're not really racing horses.
Way. Horse position. I don't know. Spinoff.
Barbie simple horse ride.
There are some horse racing arcade games back.
Right.
In the 90s,
should be like a horse racing arcade game that's you're a jockey.
Yeah.
I bet there has been.
There has been,
there is, but they're all betting games.
Yeah, Namco.
No, one where you have to actually ride the horse well in order to.
Right, and you have to smoke like 12 packs a day to make sure you don't grow.
You also have to be very small.
Is that how they stunted their growth?
And coffee, lots of coffee when they were eight. Right.
I'm going to be a jockey when I grow up.
That's why Tom's so short.
Right.
Wow.
Abnormally short.
I'd be Scott Johnson's height if I hadn't started drinking.
Yeah, what a whole inch or two taller than you are now. It'd be crazy. All right. Well, that was a fun email. Thanks for that, Nico. Send them more of these in, everybody. We love them. Again, it's currentgeek@gmail.com. Let's go around the table and thank everybody for being here and seeing what they've got going on. Roger, I'll start with you. You got anything cool going on? What's going on, man?
She's sitting in my lap.
Fatherhood. Woo!
Woohoo!
Yeah.
Where can I get one?
Get one at the Goodwill store if you donate an X amount of stuff.
Oh, Goodwill. Good. All right.
Donate enough Goodwill, you get one.
All right.
Great. You can find them just laying around in Babies R Us. Just...
Or if you want to follow me, you can follow me on Twitter at Jolly Roger.
Yeah. Roger's always a fun guy to follow, so do that. Skeptics will love him. And that's one thing I like about him, too. He's a big skeptic guy. Hey, Brian, what are you doing? What's going on?
Hi, Scott. I do Comics Coast to Coast. You can go there at comicscoasttocoast.com, and we interview web cartoonists, illustrators, animators, and we have a lot of fun. Me, Joel Duggan, and Matthew Ducharme. It's a lot of fun. You know what else we do? Mm. We get up on Saturday mornings early sometimes, like tomorrow, and we record the War of the Worlds for FilmSack.
FilmSack, that's right. We're not doing a radio play of War of the Worlds. We're watching the War of the Worlds film from 1953.
In those early days, we did not realize we were being watched.
Yep, exactly. Everyone will think it's real. They'll hear this podcast and all run out and kill themselves or something.
I watched the first 5 minutes. I'll go ahead and tell you that now. And man, he just goes on about how this planet does this and this planet does that.
You mean these drawings of Mars? Is that what you're talking about?
Right.
Yeah, we'll be doing that tomorrow. FilmSack.com for more detail. Always a good time. Myself, you, Brian Ibbett, and Randy Deluxe all having a good time around a table. And Tom, anything else from you, sir?
Citadel 32 is available in bookstores.
What?
Well, barnesandnoble.com anyway. Go to tommerrittbooks.com if you want to order it. Or if you want to get that Scott Johnson cover in real 3D space, go to lulu.com. And look on my Twitter feed. Yesterday, I posted a code that gets you free or reduced shipping.
Nice. And if you ever run into us, we'll sign it for you. How about that?
Yep.
That sounds good to me. That's going to do it for us. Thank you, everybody, for being here. Everything else going on the Frog Pants Network can be found at frogpants.com. Big things happening. Keep your eyes open. Stuff's coming. Oh, in that box. We don't want to say anything else, but there's a box.
In a box.
CurrentGeek.reddit.com is our subreddit, CurrentGeek@gmail.com, CurrentGeek.com for everything else. I'm Scott Johnson on Twitter. Tom's at Ace Detect. That's going to do it for us, for me, for Tom, and our guests. We'll see you next time.
Hi, and welcome back to Legal Geek. This week, we review the important copyright decision rendered this week by the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals in Lenz v. Universal Music, also referred to as the Dancing Baby DMCA takedown case. Stephanie Lenz is a mother who posted a YouTube video in 2007 of her toddler dancing to a Prince song, which became a viral video. On Monday, a panel of Ninth Circuit judges decided that Lenz had the right to force Universal Music Group to trial to determine whether that music industry organization had properly considered fair use before sending a DMCA takedown notice in 2007 to force this video off of YouTube. The DMCA refers to a 1998 law which heightened penalties for copyright infringement on the internet, while also adding an exemption from liability for internet service providers like YouTube. The DMCA creates a safe harbor for those service providers who comply with proper takedown notices when a copyright owner asserts content posted is infringing their valid copyrights. In this case, Universal had argued that fair use in copyright is only an affirmative defense, and that it's not necessary to worry about this concept when requesting DMCA takedowns. The court disagreed, indicating that failure to consider fair use before issuing a takedown notice would make a triable question of whether a subjective good faith belief was present that the work was actually infringing the copyright asserted. Does this decision mean that the largely automated process of scanning online content and sending mass DMCA takedowns by big record companies and movie studios will no longer work? Not so fast, my friends. Fair use is a complicated four-factor balancing test of copyright law, which balances various equitable factors to determine if reusing a copyrighted work is protected as a fair use. Although it could be argued that computerized algorithms really only consider one of these factors, namely the amount of the work copied, it will likely be difficult to argue that these scanning algorithms are ignoring fair use altogether. Put simply, it will be exceedingly difficult to stop copyright owners from proving a good faith belief when they file DMCA takedown notices that are later challenged as improper. The bottom line is computerized or automated review of online content and mass DMCA takedown notices are here to stay, like it or not. Thanks for listening. Please provide feedback and legal-themed questions or segment suggestions to me on Twitter at BuckeyeFitzy.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.